Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, we're going to be talking about some of the hot local races in East County, including the mayoral and council races in Lemon Grove and Santee. Both cities have multiple open seats, so changes are coming, and we'll tell you who some of those new faces might be. We'll also have news about local ballot measures in East County and countywide, covering issues ranging from pot shops to school bonds. We've got the scoop on a new business group forming up in La Mesa's downtown village to replace the disgraced La Mesa Village Merchants Association, which stiffed the city for nearly $50,000 in security costs for last year's Oktoberfest, sticking taxpayers with that tab. There's a lawsuit that seeks to throw out certain ballot language in Sandag's transit tax initiative, and we'll tell you why on today's show. We've also got news about an arson arrest made in connection with a recent fire in the Lyons Valley area of Jamul. Then, learn why the FDA has banned most antibiotic hand washes and how they might even be harmful for your health. On Green Scene, hear about a landmark agreement with the federal government to restore the Salton Sea. Then on Sports, we'll tell you about a major honor for a soccer star with San Diego State's Aztecs. On Destination East County, we'll have all the top festivals and events coming up, from a rendezvous with mountain men to a Native American powwow, as well as a bluegrass festival, classic car show, a chili cook-off, a hike to the Valley of the Moon, and much more. And speaking of powwows, we'll take you out to the Barona powwow with highlights from last weekend, and we'll tell you all about Saquon's powwow coming up this weekend. From Public News Service, we'll have top national news stories, including the latest on a major Native American protest against a pipeline in North Dakota, the anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks, and a ruling that's left a major bank in hot water for defrauding consumers. Then, hear why a Lemon Grove developer is facing major fines. Learn why hops may taste great in beer, but is dangerous for dogs. And hear how you can help brighten the holidays for senior citizens in La Mesa. We'll have all those stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Jonathan Getz with an election update from Lemon Grove. The Lemon Grove City Council is undergoing some big changes. Mayor Mary Sessom is stepping down. Council members Raquel Vasquez and George Gastel are running for the open mayoral seat, along with Teresa Rosaic, former president of Lemon Grove's Chamber of Commerce. Although the races are officially nonpartisan, Gastel has won endorsement from the County Democratic Party, an advantage in Lemon Grove, a heavily Democratic community. Vasquez is also a registered Democrat, while Rosaic is a Republican. Both Gastel and Vasquez have their terms end this year, meaning they are giving up their seats by running for mayor so that there will be no costly special election to fill their seats. Five candidates are hoping to fill those slots on the city council. Councilmember Gastel brings to the mayoral race 18 years of experience in Lemon Grove local government, having served on the school board before his election to the council. He says he has led successful revitalization efforts in Lemon Grove and has broad support from both Democratic and Republican elected officials. Gastel is also a history professor at Grossmont College and SDSU. He supports a stronger local economy and safe, walkable neighborhoods, and also helped establish Lemon Grove's Community Advisory Commission. Gastel represents Lemon Grove on the Metropolitan Transit System, MTS Board, and the East County Economic Development Council. Councilmember Vasquez's day job is in communications for construction projects in the city of San Diego. She was the first African-American woman elected to the council in this diverse community. A theme of Vasquez's campaign is her goal of improving the quality of life for Lemon Grove residents and making Lemon Grove a, quote, world-class city. She says she wants to make the city of Lemon Grove a thriving, safe, and business-friendly city with small-town charm offering arts, culture, and recreational opportunities. The founder of Thrive Lemon Grove, she has also served on the East County Economic Development Council and on the League of California Cities Committee on Housing, Community, and Economic Development. Council members Gastel and Vasquez have differed in their views on high-density development. In one controversial split vote, Vasquez supported it, voicing concern that other developers would shy away from investing in Lemon Grove if the city blocked the project. Gastel and the rest of the council backed community members opposed to the project and ultimately rejected it 4-1. Rosaic is a medical credentialing specialist, as well as past president of the former Lemon Grove Chamber of Commerce. She says she is running to bring fiscal responsibility and reinvigorate the city. A 52-year resident of Lemon Grove, she describes herself as a proud single parent and mother of two daughters. She states, "I want to be a conduit between the city of Lemon Grove and its residents." Public safety will be a priority if she is elected, Rosaic says. Five candidates seek to fill the two open seats on Lemon Grove City Council. They are Jerry Selby, a project manager and former council member, David Arambula, an employment litigation consultant, Steve Brown, a business owner, Matt Mendoza, an operations manager, and Michael E. Summers, a small business owner. Although the race is officially nonpartisan, Arambula and Selby are both endorsed by the Democratic Party. The Republican Party has yet to issue endorsements, though Brown, Mendoza, and Summers are Republicans. David Arambula is a Marine Corps veteran with degrees in law and business. He currently works as litigation consultant for a law firm that focuses on workers' rights. He is also on the executive team of the UCSD Chancellor's Community Advisory Board. His priorities include safe neighborhoods, repairing streets and sidewalks, and rebuilding downtown to create jobs and revitalize Lemon Grove. Steve Brown has run a family business here for 30 years and volunteered the past 22 years as a church youth director, as well as chairing a meal program for seniors. He was a committee member on the city's Downtown Redevelopment Committee in 2001 and the Street Improvement Task Force in 2013. His priorities include safety, positive youth programs, effective use of law enforcement resources, and a healthy business environment. Matt Mendoza has lived in Lemon Grove his entire life. Manager of operations for major aerospace company, he says he brings problem-solving and leadership to the job. His goals include a clean city, a business-friendly environment, good-paying jobs, and a safe place for families to live. Jerry Selby says that as a councilman, he helped guide the city through tough times during recession. His priorities include economic growth and a vibrant business community, along with security, jobs, paved streets, more sidewalks, and expanded recreational opportunities. A project manager with a bachelor's degree in public administration and a master's in city planning, he has served on the city's planning commission and on oversight committees for redevelopment, as well as a school district bond. He is also involved with youth sports. Michael Summers is a Vietnam veteran who says he's committed to serving others. He co-owns a small business and has also worked in management for Cox Communications and Westfield America. He holds degrees in psychology and biblical studies, as well as an MBA in financial management. He's also been an officer in several nonprofits, including the El Cajon Arts and Culture Commission and the La Mesa Spring Valley Educational Foundation. He wants to keep Lemon Grove as a business-friendly city, focused on providing streamlined services and improving public safety for residents. This is Jonathan Getz, and that was your election update from Lemon Grove.
This is Mike Allen with a report from East County Magazine on mayoral and city council races in Santee. Santee's longtime mayor, Randy Vogel, is running for state assembly and is not seeking re-election. Two city council members are running to lead the city as mayor, John Minto and Rob McNellis. Retired police detective John Minto has served on the council for 14 years, as well as on numerous boards ranging from SANDAG to the Metropolitan Transit System and the East County Economic Development Council. His accomplishments include leading efforts to establish the Santee Sports Complex and Town Center Park. On his website, he states, "I want our city to be affordable, to provide opportunities for all, for residents to be able to raise their families comfortably, and for everybody to enjoy Santee." In his ballot statement, he promises to adhere to the highest level of integrity if elected. Minto says his top priorities if elected will be to create a new senior center and a library, as well as to maintain streets and to keep crime low. Rob McNellis is a real estate and mortgage professional, a former Chamber of Commerce president, and past Santee Citizen of the Year. Santee resident since 1994, McNellis says his priorities include repairing roads, providing senior services, keeping parks and communities safe, and keeping local government out of your home and out of your wallet, according to his ballot statement. On his website, he says he also wants to build a business-friendly environment and maintain a balanced budget. McNellis lists his, among his accomplishments on the city council implementing a 5-year budget outlook and a tiered pension plan, as well as proposing dog parks in Santee. A special election will be held to fill the council seat of whoever wins the mayoral race, since those terms are not expired. In addition, three candidates are running for the council seat being vacated by Jack Dale, who is retiring. Stephen Houlihan is president and co-founder of Save Mission Trails, which led to the successful effort to stop the Quail Brush gas-fired power plant. He also fought to obtain state scenic highway designation for Highway 52. He is also a registered nurse and has a master's degree in business administration and a master's in science. A third-generation Santee resident, Houlihan says on his ballot statement, "Residents need a council member that won't buckle under pressure from out-of-town profiteers." He promises to stand firm against extreme proposals that would sell out Santee's quality of life and further gridlock roads. He wants traffic solutions in place before allowing large traffic generation subdivisions. Houlihan also says he will fight for police and firefighters, strong local businesses, excellent schools and parks while protecting our neighborhoods. Mason Heron is a legislative director for Assemblyman Brian Jones and has also worked as a policy consultant in the private sector, working on law enforcement, water, and small businesses. He's also been a member of service clubs and the Santee Parks and Recreation Committee. Heron says if elected, he will draw on these experiences to grow the local economy, implement balanced budgets, keep taxes low, maintain low pension liabilities, upgrade infrastructure. In his ballot statement, he says he will also work to improve parks, roads, and public safety services. Dustin Trotter is a carpenter who owns a door and trim company. He says he built his company from the ground up through hard work and dedication and brings that same level of commitment to volunteer efforts across the city. Trotter has an extensive community advocate and volunteer record. He is an active member of the Santee Santas program, Santee Food Bank, Guardian Angels Church, the Santee Parks and Recreation Committee, Santee Lakes Foundation, and an appointed member of the Community Oriented Policing Committee. He says he's running to give back to his community. On his website, he says he will work toward a business-friendly environment by cutting red tape. He also promises to support improving public transportation and fixing crumbling streets, also working to make a city a better place by encouraging open space and parks, and completing a community center for Santee.
Beyond the blizzard of ballot measures statewide and candidates on your November ballot, East County voters will be asked to weigh in on a variety of local initiatives with big impacts. Here are some details. Measure A is a countywide measure proposed by the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG. If approved by voters, it would levy a half-cent sales tax increase over 40 years to fund transportation improvements to roads, bicycle and pedestrian paths, and transit upgrades, including a new South Bay trolley line. The measure has sparked controversy primarily over the balance between transit and road expenditures. It's opposed by the Democratic Party, conservative taxpayer groups, Mayor Kevin Faulkner, some environmental groups, and several East County elected officials who say there aren't enough benefits for East County. Measure B, the second countywide measure, was put on the ballot by the developer of Lilac Hills, a controversial 1,746-unit housing project proposed in Valley Center. The developer seeks to evade environmental review of the project by seeking approval directly from voters. If approved, this would set a precedent for builders anywhere in unincorporated San Diego County to dodge the normal planning process, including environmental impact reports required by the California Environmental Quality Act. In El Cajon, Measure S asks voters to approve a shift to trustee districts, meaning each city council member would represent a specific neighborhood. The action aims to comply with Voting Rights Act requirements and give minorities a strong opportunity to elect representatives from their communities. Such measures are generally supported by civil rights groups and also help cities avoid costly lawsuits brought against municipalities that fail to comply with Voting Rights Act laws. The main argument against district elections is some elected officials may be less answerable to residents who can't vote for them, placing interests of their own constituents ahead of citywide concerns or concerns of a different district in the city. Measure U in La Mesa asks residents to legalize medical marijuana dispensaries. 2 years ago, La Mesa voters rejected Prop J, which would have done just that. Despite voters saying no, the city has been battling a rash of illegal, unregulated pot shops springing up. Now supporters of legalization are trying again, this time with Measure U. The ballot language asks voters whether La Mesa should authorize and regulate medical marijuana dispensaries, as well as the cultivation and manufacturing of medical marijuana. Measure V in Lemon Grove similarly asks voters to rescind a ban on marijuana dispensaries and add a medical marijuana regulatory ordinance to Lemon Grove's municipal code. It is uncertain how these measures may be impacted if California voters approve legalization of recreational marijuana, which is on the November ballot statewide. Measure X asks Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District voters whether $348 million in bonds should be issued. The bond would be used to repair classrooms and labs, clean up toxins such as asbestos, prepare veterans, workers, and students for jobs in technology, business, and science, and build new facilities, including a workforce training center. Measure BB in the Grossmont Union High School District asks voters to approve $128 million in bonds to upgrade classrooms and labs, make repairs, modernize technology infrastructure, improve safety, replace deteriorating portable structures, build new facilities to accommodate growth, and renovate career training facilities. Conspicuously missing from this bond is any mention of building an Alpine High School. The Alpine High School was listed in two prior bonds, but was never built, leading Alpine parents to claim mismanagement of bond funds, a contention with which the county grand jury agreed. Grossmont refused to build the school or to turn over bond funds to a neighboring district to do so, as the grand jury had recommended. That led to a costly lawsuit funded by district taxpayers and a request to the state by Alpine parents to split off Alpine from the district. So a key question is whether Grossmont voters will trust the school board to use bond monies as promised in the future when it failed to do so in the past, and the board majority that made those decisions remains in power. Measure EE in the Cajon Valley Union School District is a $20 million school bond measure. If approved, would fund increased computer access for students and upgrade to technology. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Kim Cooney.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A new business association led by prominent business leaders in La Mesa has arisen to fill the gap left by the troubled La Mesa Village Merchants Association. The new nonprofit group, called the La Mesa Village Association, held its inaugural community outreach meeting last week at the San Pasqual Wine Bar in the village, drawing a packed house. Aaron Dean, chair of the fledgling business association, says the aim is to empower businesses in the village to have a united voice, as well as organize events and find ways to attract new businesses to enhance the historic downtown village. Dean has a big stake in making the new venture a success. He's the CEO of the soon-to-open Depot Springs Brewery, and he also owns properties in the village where several new restaurants are set to open this fall, as well as the first condominium project approved in the village in years. Other officers of the new association include both existing and new business owners. The officers are unpaid volunteers, and most put in $1,000 in seed money to kick off the organization, says Dean. The old merchants group ceased activities after suffering through recession, a year of streetscape improvements during which construction dried up business along La Mesa Boulevard, falling membership, and some questionable management decisions. Last year, the dwindling merchants group defaulted on its payment to the city for security from Oktoberfest, sticking taxpayers with a nearly $50,000 tab. The group also canceled annual events, including the weekly summer car show and antique fair, ultimately losing the support of merchants. Dean, who was not involved in the old association, is advocating for a fresh start, and many at the inaugural meeting voiced enthusiasm. But some business owners have voiced concerns that the new organization's founding members list of 14 businesses to date includes several names of businesses that are owned by officers and board members from the failed merchants group. Dean, above all, brings a burst of energy and enthusiasm to the new group. He says he was involved in the Gas Lamp Districts Association for over a decade, and he's seen firsthand how a successful business district group can help the area prosper. The new La Mesa Village Association's organizers discussed possible events and asked those present for their ideas. Now, Christmas in the Village is set for December 10th with a promise to bring back the glory days of street closures and chestnuts roasting on open fire pits. The annual Oktoberfest, which is being run this year by an outside management group, is also expected to continue. Other proposed events include a boulevard pet parade, a La Mesa 5K and hill climb, farmers market on Mondays on the boulevard, an arts and crafts fair, and a disc golf tournament. Dean says the association would hire outside help to run its events. The group also plans to promote events heavily through social media. For more information, you can visit lamesavillageassociation.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Opponents of Measure A, a countywide transportation initiative, have filed a lawsuit in San Diego Superior Court challenging the accuracy of ballot statements filed by Measure A's supporters. The lawsuit alleges that ballot arguments in support of Measure A make misleading claims in violation of California law. Ricardo Ochoa, legal counsel to the Quality of Life Coalition that filed the suit, states, "The simple truth is Measure A is deceptive and does more harm than good to San Diego County communities. Specifically, the lawsuit claims that statements on water quality and transit fare reduction are misleading. The Pro-A ballot statement promises to improve water quality by treating polluted runoff and to reduce transit fares for seniors, students, the disabled, and veterans. But Measure A includes no dedicated funding to either of those causes," the suit contends. Gretchen Newsom, petitioner in the lawsuit, accuses Measure A backers of lying to voters. Measure A opponents include environmental, public health, and social justice organizations. Opponents argue that the measure's 40-year half-cent sales tax increase gives a blank check to the government with no guarantees to relieve traffic congestion, reduce air pollution, or meet state targets to address climate change. Supporters of Measure A contend it would raise $18 billion over the next several decades to pay for freeway improvements, surface street repairs, and mass transit projects, including a new South Bay trolley line needed to meet the region's transportation needs. The measure is supported by SANDAG, Mayor Kevin Faulkner, and the San Diego Chamber of Commerce. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Kim Cooney.
A 17-year-old has been arrested on arson charges, Cal Fire reports. The juvenile is believed to be responsible for starting the Point Fire on August 17th, which charred 25 acres in Spring Valley. The brush fire, which started on forest lands, forced evacuation of homes, injured a firefighter, and put public safety at risk. Multiple fire engine crews and aircraft battled the blaze before it was fully contained on the evening of August 18th. The arson investigation was led by CAL FIRE and San Diego County authorities with help from the San Diego City Metro Arson Strike Team. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mike Allen.
This is Kim Cooney with a health report. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has announced a ban on antibacterial hand wash products containing any of 19 different ingredients, including the most commonly used ingredients, triclosan and triclocarbon. The ban includes liquid and bar soap forms of antibacterial hand washes used with water, but does not include sanitizing hand wipes or antibacterial products used in healthcare facilities. Dr. Janet Woodstock at the FDA concludes, consumers may think antibacterial washes are more effective at preventing the spread of germs, but we have no scientific evidence that they are any better than plain soap and water. In fact, some data suggests that antibacterial ingredients may do more harm than good over the long term. Long-term exposure to some of the banned ingredients could lead to bacterial resistance or hormonal effects in people using these products. Manufacturers will have 1 year to comply with the new FDA rules by removing products from the market or reformulating them to remove the banned antibacterial active ingredients. Not all ingredients used in antibacterial washes have been banned. The FDA has deferred action on 3 ingredients pending collection of more data, so antibacterial hand washes with those ingredients can remain on the market for now.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. On Wednesday, the state of California and the federal government signed a historic memorandum of understanding to protect the Salton Sea, located in the desert in Imperial County east of San Diego. The agreement affirms many goals already established by the state and creates new opportunities for geothermal energy development in the area. It also creates a policy framework for the two parties to work together. Responding to that landmark news, a coalition of conservation groups, including Defenders of Wildlife, the Audubon California, and the Pacific Institute, as well as the Sierra Club, called on the state of California to use this new agreement with the federal government on the Salton Sea as a launching point for a renewed effort to get much-needed conservation projects started on the ground. Now, due to existing agreements, the Salton Sea in 2018 will begin receiving substantially less water than it has in the past, eventually as much as 40% less. The shrinking sea could expose over 60,000 acres of the lake bed, generating massive dust storms that could impair the health of 650,000 Californians, including here in San Diego. The Salton Sea ecosystem currently hosts more than 400 species of birds, often numbering in the hundreds of thousands, and that entire ecosystem could collapse. Kim Delfino, California Program Director for Defenders of Wildlife, states, "We're glad to see the federal government and state officials recognize what an important priority this is for California and the nation. Their collaboration could avoid an environmental disaster at the Salton Sea." But Michael Cohen, the senior associate with Pacific Institute, observes, "While we now have a memorandum of understanding, there is still no understanding as to how California will achieve its goal of 25,000 acres of habitat and dust control projects at the Salton Sea in time to avert a regional public health and ecological catastrophe." Marina Berrigan, organizer with the Sierra Club's San Gorgonio chapter, warns, "If the Salton Sea disappears, it will have devastating impacts on the surrounding frontline communities, largely made up of low-income people of color, who already suffer from some of the worst air in the nation. This injustice must stop, and resources to protect our environment must move forward. Now it's time to channel this state and federal collaboration to actual Salton Sea projects that benefit people and the ecosystem," she adds. Sarah Friedman is the senior campaign representative with Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. She calls the White House announcement this week a step in the right direction for exploring geothermal around the Salton Sea. She adds, We know geothermal projects located on the exposed lake bed will reduce dust pollution and move us forward on our climate goals while creating family-sustaining jobs and providing local revenues. Audubon California Executive Director Bridget McCormick also hailed the announcement, stating, "This is the best opportunity we have had in years to make a real difference for the more than 650,000 people who live around the Salton Sea, as well as the birds and other wildlife that depend on this place for their survival." Now here's some more background on the long effort to save the Salton Sea. When the state of California signed a settlement agreement in 2003 over water issues, the state committed to funding restoration at the Salton Sea to address the widespread habitat loss and dust created by implementation of the agreement. And much of that dust contains toxins from agricultural runoff into the sea over the years. There have been legislative proposals in the past, public hearings, and planning sessions, but little progress has been made on the ground. A task force created last year by California Governor Jerry Brown set a goal for creating 25,000 acres of restored habitat and air quality protection projects, and that commitment was reaffirmed in this week's Memorandum of Understanding. Health officials and environmentalists emphasize that meeting this goal is essential to assure that the Salton Sea does not become a public health threat to an area already suffering from the worst childhood asthma rates in the state. Pollutants released by drying up of the Salton Sea would also impact air quality as far away as here in San Diego County. Saving the Salton Sea is also critical to assure that the sea will continue to provide habitat for millions of birds that travel along the Pacific Flyway. Almost 400 different bird species rely on the deep water, shoreline, mudflats, and wetlands at the Salton Sea, as well as the river channels and agricultural drains leading into it. Tilapia fish live in the deeper waters, providing essential food for many species, including California brown pelicans, American white pelicans, double-crested cormorants, and Caspian terns. But perhaps the sea's greatest value for birds is its ability to support very large numbers of water birds during the winter months, when those mudflats and shorelines are also essential for hundreds of thousands of migrating shorebirds.
This is Liz Alper with an SDSU men's soccer report. After scoring the game-winning goal against number 1 Akron last Friday, San Diego State defender Travis Nicklaw has earned a spot on the TopDrawersSoccer.com Team of the Week, the website announced on Tuesday. With his recognition, the Aztec redshirt senior becomes the first SDSU student athlete to land on the exclusive 11-player team this season. Playing in his first match of the year, Nicklaw notched his first career game-winning goal on a penalty kick in the 61st minute to spark the Aztecs to a momentous 1-0 victory over the top-ranked Zips in front of a boisterous crowd of 2,041 fans at SDSU Sports Tech. The University City High product was also part of a backline that limited Akron to just 6 shots for the game, including a scant 2 on goal. The Zips entered the contest averaging 21 shots per game, which ranked 7th in the nation. Nicklaw received all Pac-12 Conference honorable mention in 2015 despite missing 5 matches to compete for the Guam national team. Upon returning to Montezuma Road, he started 12 of 13 games at center back, finishing 4th on the team with 2 goals and 6 points. Nicklaw also appeared on Todd Roller Soccer's top 100 freshman list in 2012.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine radio show. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson.
And this is Jonathan Getz.
This week's Destination East County includes a chili cook-off, a breakfast for wounded veterans, and VW Mania Night at the Classic Cruises.
Plus, we'll be telling you about upcoming attractions, including concerts and music festivals, a powwow at Saquon, Julian's Apple Days, a barbecue competition in Spring Valley, Oktoberfests in La Mesa and El Cajon, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, and a hike to the Valley of the Moon.
So stay tuned for all these events and many more.
Santee's annual Bluegrass Festival will be held Saturday, September 10th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Town Center's Community Park East. This year's musical lineup features two talented bluegrass bands, the Homesick Hitcher and Mojave Soul. Admission entitles ticket holders to sample several varieties of wine, beer from numerous craft breweries, and food prepared by local restaurants. Proceeds from the one-night festival are used to fund recreational scholarship programs, programs for seniors and low- and moderate-income families, and funds for the Santee Teen Center. For tickets and details, visit www.santeebluegrassfestival.com.
The Alpine Kiwanis Club will host a chili cook-off and car show on Saturday, September 10th. From 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Alpine Community Center Park, you can taste and vote for your favorite chili and check out the car show next door at Alpine Elementary School. Face painting, raffles, vendor booths, and live music are all part of the fun. Tickets are available for the event, or you can get early tickets at the Alpine Community Center or Alpine Postal Annex. For more information, visit alpinekiwanis.com/events.
The Saquon Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will host its annual powwow at the Saquon Reservation in El Cajon. The three-day tribal gathering will feature traditional Native American dances, hand drum contests, bird singing and dancing competitions for cash prizes, peon games, authentic Indian cuisine, and a flag ceremony. For details, see saquontribe.com.
Bugs will be crawling the streets of downtown El Cajon on Wednesday night, September 14th. Volkswagen Beetles, that is. It's VW Mania Night at the Classic Cruises, taking place from 5 to 8 p.m. on Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. This week's event will also feature live dance performances. Find out more at downtownelcajon.com.
On September 11th, the Warrior Foundation invites you to its Freedom Banquet at the Sons of the American Legion Post in Julian. Proceeds will benefit injured veterans and also provide injured warriors a round trip home for the holidays. Breakfast will be served from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. For more information, you can visit the Sons of the American Legion Post 468 website at salpost468.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Sirens Crush, a high-energy dance band that's one of the hottest entertainment acts in town, will be performing live at El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert Night this Friday, September 16th. The modern pop and dance music concert will get you moving and grooving from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Park in downtown El Cajon. For details, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Children of all ages are welcome to come to the Alpine Library for Fantastic Friday on September 16th at 3:30 p.m. for a hands-on demonstration on how to grow milkweed to attract monarch butterflies. Kids will also learn about the life cycle of the monarch butterfly and why it is so important to grow milkweed. As an added bonus, every participant will go home with a free kit, which includes milkweed seeds, Ranger Rick's wildlife notebook, and many other items. For more information, you can email wildlifehabitats@aol.com.
Here's something to howl about. The Julian Music Festival on September 17th will benefit the California Wolf Center, which is working to preserve a rare and endangered wolf species. The music festival will be held on September 17th from 1 to 7 p.m. at Mangini Winery in Julian. The 47th Annual Music Festival will feature a diverse lineup of entertainment. For tickets and details, you can go to julianmusicfestival.com.
Hukumbud hikers and walkers invite you to a full moon hike to the Valley of the Moon. This 5-mile, 4-hour evening hike to an otherworldly location in the desert just past the San Diego / Imperial County line near the Mexican border is rated hard. Meet at 5 p.m. at the Hukumbud Spa. Bring a flashlight, plenty of water, and wear sturdy shoes. For questions, you can contact hike leader Bill Pape at 619-766-4927. The annual Julian Apple Days Festival offers weekend full of fun for the whole family on September 24th and 25th. It's part of the longer Apple Days celebration. The 2-day festival will be held at Mingini Winery featuring apple displays, music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, gold panning demonstrations, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contests, and of course, apple pie. For more information, visit julianca.com.
Welcome! You're invited to the largest Oktoberfest celebration west of the Mississippi, La Mesa Oktoberfest from September 30th to October 2nd. This community event is spread out over nearly 6 blocks in La Mesa Village and features hundreds of exhibitors, family-friendly activities, German food, music, dancing, outfits, games, and, of course, beer. For more information, visit the La Mesa Oktoberfest, AOKTOBERFEST.com.
The German-American Club in El Cajon will host its annual Oktoberfest over 2 weekends, September 30th through October 2nd, and again, October 7th through the 9th. This Oktoberfest features a band from Germany, authentic German food from Bavarian pastries to an ox on a spit, plus German beers and folk dancing. You can dance to oomph music, polkas and waltzes, and let the children enjoy a kids zone in El Cajon. Learn more at GermanClubSanDiego.org.
You're invited to step back in time and enjoy an authentic 1800 to 1840s Rocky Mountain fur traders encampment at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous from September 30th to October 9th. Day visitors and period campers are welcome. The rendezvous of mountain men includes demonstrations of primitive survival skills, including cooking, tool making, tomahawk throwing, archery, and black powder shooting. The event will be held at the Mataguay Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. For details, you can visit LagunaMountainRendezvous.com.
Santee Legs invite you to Stockzilla on October 1st and 2nd. When all 7 lakes will be stocked with 3,500 pounds of catfish, there will also be tagged fish and surprise prize giveaways. The most stocking will be in Lakes 6 and 7, which are reserved for campers. For more information or to reserve a campsite, you can visit SanteeLakes.com.
Fire up your barbecues and get your best recipes ready. The 7th Annual Spring Valley Tailgate Barbecue Festival is looking for participants in its annual barbecue competition. The event is sponsored by the Cali Comfort Restaurant and the Marceau Walshef Youth Empowerment Organization to raise funds for youth sports. The barbecue competition will be held on Sunday, October 16th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Troy Street in Spring Valley outside Cali Comfort Restaurant. Besides sampling barbecue, you can also visit a beer garden, shop at street vendors, enjoy live music, and plenty of family fun. For info on how to enter your amateur barbecue team, call 619-490-0684 or visit CaliComfortBarbecue.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event that you would like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Oh,
46th annual Verona Powwow was held over the weekend at the Verona Reservation in Lakeside. Powwows aim to preserve Native American cultural traditions for future generations. Verona's powwow attracts tribal dancers and drummers from across the nation, all in full regalia, and each dance has special significance. Visitors can also find Native American arts and crafts, such as jewelry, pottery, or hand-carved flutes, as well as enjoying Indian fry bread. A highlight of the powwow is a grand procession led by honored tribal elders. At Verona, the grand procession included a victory song, honoring all warriors, including our military and veterans.
To celebrate with them their victory as they return home to their families. Very honored to have these distinguished men carrying our field staff and our flag, representing the spirit of our warriors, the military and civic duty. Charlie Tailfeather carrying our Eagle Staff from the Blackheath, Chippewa Cree people, carrying our Eagle Staff for us this evening. Thank you, Charlie. Aho, hi, hi.
Now, if you missed the Verona Powwow, there's still time to visit the Sequon Powwow here in East County, which is coming up next weekend. You can find details at eastcountymagazine.org in our events section and on our calendar. This is Miriam Raftery, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, September 9th, 2016. I'm Mary Sherman. A Dakota Access Pipeline court ruling expected today. 15 years after 9/11, Muslims in the U.S. still face discrimination, and a major financial institution slapped with a hefty fine for fraudulent practices. Those are among the stories we're highlighting in today's news. We begin with the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline project, which could be permanently shut down today, pending a federal judge's decision. Brandon Campbell has more from Native protesters who are hoping for a favorable ruling.
Members of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe of North and South Dakota are suing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Tribal members say the agency issued improper permits for the project, and they're asking a judge to halt construction of the pipeline while the lawsuit moves forward. That decision's expected to come down later today. Crystal Two Bulls with the Red Warrior Camp says members of her group have been protesting the pipeline for several reasons, including possible damage to the water supplies along the project's route from North Dakota to Illinois.
Pipeline's leak. It's just a matter of when and where and how much oil they're going to spill. It's not specific to Native people, but this issue with the contaminated water impacts everybody along the Missouri River.
Dakota Access has defended the project, however, arguing that it'll help the U.S. become less dependent on foreign oil. The protests around the project development site at Cannonball, North Dakota, became violent last weekend when private security contractors used dogs and pepper spray against protesters.
The Obama administration says a few days after an American and Australian were kidnapped from American University in Kabul last month, U.S. Special Operations Forces from SEAL Team 6 attempted to rescue them, but failed to find them at the location they went to. Officials say there was a firefight on the ground in which seven enemy fighters were killed. The U.S. was never certain the professors were at the site, or if they were, when they had been moved. This Sunday is the 15th anniversary of the September 11th attacks, and American Muslim communities across the U.S. still face a backlash. Eric Tagedoff has the story.
Hate crimes against Muslims in the U.S. have risen, according to the FBI, even as hate crimes against other communities have decreased. Sahar Bassioni, with the Muslim Educational Trust in Portland, says Muslims are just one of many minority groups that have dealt with discrimination in the course of the country's history.
We need to unlearn lots of stereotypes that we have. We have to be very conscious of how we view people who come from different backgrounds. My hope as an American Muslim mother is for my kids to be seen as equal to anybody else.
Bassioni adds she hasn't personally run into discrimination in Portland, but her daughter has.
Wells Fargo Bank, one of the nation's largest banks, was given $150 million in civil penalties on Thursday for secretly opening millions of unauthorized deposit and credit card accounts that harmed customers. Federal authorities say employees boosted sales figures by covertly opening the accounts and funding them by transferring money from customers' authorized accounts without permission. In all, workers opened roughly 1.5 million bank accounts and applied for over 560,000 credit cards that may not have been authorized by customers. Home attendants who work 24-hour shifts caring for elderly New Yorkers say they deserve to be paid for all the hours they're on the job. And Andrea Sears reports some are filing a lawsuit about it.
Some of the workers at the First Chinese Presbyterian Community Affairs Home Attendant Corporation have put in 20 years, working 24-hour shifts, sometimes 7 days a week, but they only are paid for about half of those hours. According to Mika Nagasaki, an organizer for the Ain't I a Woman campaign, Medicaid has approved these patients to receive 24-hour care.
They have Alzheimer's or dementia, or they have incontinence. So it's very physical labor. It's a lot of lifting. It's a lot of watching. It's a lot of emotional work. And it's constant.
The workers, who say they are penalized if they refuse to work 24-hour shifts, have filed a lawsuit against the company seeking pay for all the hours they are on duty.
The CDC says the percentage of Americans that do not have health insurance now sits at 8.6%, the lowest on record. Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell applauded the historic uninsured rate and cited the Affordable Care Act as a primary driver of the drop. With college classes in full swing and dorms teeming with eager and excited students, there's one unwelcome part of back-to-school celebrations. Stephanie Carson has more on the red zone and why students should be aware of it.
The red zone describes the first 6 to 10 weeks of the semester when a large percentage of sexual assaults occur on college campuses. Irene Dwinell with the Orange County Rape Crisis Center says activities during this time of year can create the perfect storm for risk of assault.
It's a transition time. There's lots of reasons to have parties. It's a part of the culture of the welcome on most university and college campuses. And so with that, unfortunately, goes an increase in potential for sexual assaults and rapes to occur.
Dwinell advises students to be mindful of the amount of alcohol consumed at a party and maintain watch over your drink at all times. In addition, students are advised to become familiar with campus before heading out to parties and trust their instincts. According to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, 9 out of every 10 victims of rape or sexual assault knew their attacker. And it's estimated that for every 1,000 women attending a college or university, there are 35 incidents of rape each academic year.
And I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service. Member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.com.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jim Brewster with the Green Scene Report. The San Diego Regional Water Quality Control Board has imposed a $595,367 fine against developer San Altos Lemon Grove LLC for water quality violations related to construction activities at its 18-acre Valencia Hills residential development in Lemon Grove. The Water Board found that the developer committed 81 violations of state law between December 2014 and September 2015. According to the Water Board, the violations focused on the site's persistent lack of effective erosion and sediment controls and subpar housekeeping practices that resulted in 6 sediment discharges from the Valencia Hills construction site into the Encanto Channel. The Encanto Channel flows into Colas Creek, which flows into San Diego Bay. San Diego Water Board Executive Officer David Gibson said the hefty penalty reflects the board's concern for what he calls the appalling lack of compliance and cooperation with City and Water Board staff by San Altos Lemon Grove LLC, despite many months of inspections and warnings. Sediment from erosion and graded land that's exposed and inadequately protected is the pollutant of greatest concern at construction sites because the sediment can damage aquatic life and ecosystems. Sediment often also transports other harmful pollutants such as metals, fertilizers, pesticides, oil, grease, and bacteria into creeks, bays, and ocean. Violations at the Valencia Hills site were brought to the San Diego Water Board's attention by the City of Lemon Grove after its multiple warnings and enforcement efforts directed at the developer were met with minimal response. Gibson said the Water Board is deeply appreciative of the city's efforts to protect water quality in public streets from illegal construction stormwater discharges. The nearly $600,000 penalty will be deposited into the State Water Pollution Cleanup and Abatement Account. This fund was created by the legislature to provide money for public agencies to remediate pollution when responsible parties are not available. Eligible entities that can apply for this funding include public agencies, as well as certain nonprofit organizations and tribal governments that serve a disadvantaged community and have the authority to clean up water waste.
This is Jonathan Getz with an important alert for dog owners and beer brewers. Home brewing of beer is increasingly popular, but unfortunately, hops used to make beer can be deadly to dogs. Death can occur within 6 hours after consumption if medical treatment is not obtained. Veterinarians, poison control centers, and craft brew beer publications are reporting an increase in the number of dogs poisoned by raw hops, dried hops plugs, or hops pellets. Dogs that ingest hops may show signs of toxicity, including vomiting, agitation, panting, and rapid heartbeat. Hops raises the body temperature in dogs to over 106 degrees, which can cause permanent brain injury or even death. Treatment includes administering antidote medication, inducing vomiting, rinsing the stomach out under anesthesia, and immediately cooling down the dog. If you brew your own beer, always keep hops supplies and hops plants out of the reach of dogs. If you believe your dog has ingested hops, seek veterinary care promptly. You can douse your pet with cold water, use ice packs and air conditioning in your vehicle to help cool down your dog and maybe even save your dog's life.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on how you can help seniors have a brighter holiday season in La Mesa. Each year, the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce collects donated items and delivers gift baskets for seniors over the holidays. These gift baskets are delivered along with a hot turkey dinner and all the trimmings to selected seniors by the La Mesa Retired Senior Volunteer Patrol. Chamber President Mary England says, this year the number of seniors that need assistance has been increased to 24. She asks community members to donate items by Monday, November 28th, adding, this will allow time to wrap all of the items, prepare all of the gift baskets, and purchase items needed that we believe will make this holiday so special for these wonderful members of our community. Donors are asked to bring 24 of each item so that there will be enough for all of the seniors' gift baskets. Items needed include canned soups, canned vegetables, canned fruits, crackers, packets of pasta or macaroni and cheese, soap, toothpaste, tissues, hand sanitizers, pens and pads of paper, and gift cards from stores such as Target, Walmart, or any grocery store. England adds, if you have another item you believe will put a smile on their faces, by all means, drop them off. We want to make this again a memorable holiday for our homebound seniors. Donated items should be delivered by November 28th to the La Mesa Chamber Office at 8080 La Mesa Boulevard, Suite 212 in La Mesa on Monday, Wednesday, or Friday between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Or you can call Mary England at 619-251-7730 and she'll coordinate picking up those items from you.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.